Well, we're very happy to bring on an author who we had on last year, wrote a very good book, and the new one, it was called Almost Perfect, but the new one he's got out is called The Immaculate Inning, and it is Joe Cox, and Joe wrote a book about the sort of strange plays of baseball, the hidden stories of baseball, the unassisted triple plays, the 40-40 seasons, and the stories behind baseball's rarest feats. So, Joe, I love the book, and it's a good one for anyone who just wants to learn about baseball history. How are you?
I'm doing great, Marty. Always good to talk with you.
Yeah, tell us about the book and how this one came about. We had you on last year with those perfect games. Wasn't that they lost in the last 8 2/3? Wasn't that one about?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it in a nutshell, and I kind of followed up off of that, and the idea I went back to the publisher with was to do a book about unassisted triple plays. And they liked that idea, but they said, why stop at one thing? Let's write about some more. So I ended up with 30 different feats. Chapter one is unassisted triple plays, but you know they wanted a little more bang for their buck. So we went into 29 other directions, everything from getting 6 walks in a game to position players pitching to 20 strikeouts in a game. We tried to pick some season-long or you know longer streak-related things instead of just single-game things and divide between the two. But either way, you know there were great stories everywhere I looked.
Well, it's funny because we were talking about Harry Wendelstadt this morning. we're talking about Harry Wendelstadt this morning, the umpire who sent Dick Dietz back to the plate with the bases loaded after he was hit by a pitch that preserved Don Drysdale's scoreless streak. And his kid, Hunter Wendelstadt, last night was part of the review, which reversed a hit in the Sean Manaea no-hitter. And I think you actually mentioned the Drysdale streak in your book, did you not?
Oh, I did, yeah. One of the chapters was pitchers who threw 50 or more scoreless innings. And Drysdale was the record holder until that record was broken by Oral Hershiser. But it was funny going through those stories. There was almost always some kind of little break that a pitcher had to get. And those were all in the pre-replay days. But Hershiser benefited from an interference call. It looked like the Giants had scored a run on him. But the runner at second who broke up the double play was called for interference, which negated the run, which kept his streak alive and let him break Drysdale's record. And, of course, you allude to Drysdale and the hit-by-pitch that wasn't a hit-by-pitch. But there's always some kind of little situation like that. You can't throw 50 scoreless innings in a row without a little help, I guess.
Well, it's true, and it's part of baseball. It's part of a no-hitter. You're going to find a great catch or a scoring decision. We talked about that. Some of the Giants who lost no-hitters on scoring decisions. Talked about old sad Sam Jones who lost one to the Dodgers back in 59. But some of the things you talk about, and we allude to some of them, well, what are some of your favorites that if there was a fan who even was a casual fan that could pick up the book and say, boy, let me read that chapter. This one is kind of interesting. What are some of your favorites?
One of the ones that was kind of out of left field and ended up being really rewarding was batters who hit a home run on the first pitch they saw in the major leagues. And I believe that's happened 30 times. Strangely, none of the guys who've done that went on to Hall of Fame careers. The guy with the most home runs in the group was Jay Bell, a pretty solid infielder in the 80s and 90s, but not a Hall of Fame guy. But to follow up on some of those stories, I talked with a guy from the Astros named Mark Sakamano, who was 2-for-10 in his entire major league career. But the first pitch he saw in the big leagues, he hit out of the ballpark. And he had a great story of his minor league manager who kind of corralled him in the dugout and said, hey, he throws you a strike, you better be swinging. So he had that in his mind when he went to the plate and he got the strike on the first pitch and he swung the bat and you know, in front of his family and the people in his hometown, floated around the bases, I guess. So stories like that are a lot of fun. The ones that are kind of under the radar are a little more fun to me, although there are plenty of famous stories and not-so-famous stories in here.
Well, one you talk about is the incident in 1976 where racism may have decided the American League title, the batting title, and players have ducked out of the lineup several times to protect being a batting champion. I remember in the early 1900s, They gave away seven bunts in a row to Napoleon Lajoie, so he would beat Ty Cobb in a batting race. But what about the one in 1976 where racism may have decided the American League title?
Yeah, it was funny. I knew nothing about this. This was totally a research find, which is odd because I'm 37. I wasn't around then, but that's not so far before my time. I would have thought I knew about this, but it was teammates, George Brett and Hal McRae, who go into the last game of the season competing for a batting title, and they actually hit one in front of the other. Brett hit and then McRae, and they went into their last at-bat, and you know, the only way Brett was going to win was if he got a hit and McRae made an out. Well, Brett's up first, and he hits a just can of corn fly ball that the left fielder curiously misplays into an inside-the-park home run just in time for McRae to then come up and ground out. But the whole thing, Hal McRae just had a very bad taste in his mouth and said some things about it after the game. And it was really a pretty embarrassing situation. Major League Baseball, you know, sent it up to the American League president who reviewed it and kind of made a very iffy statement of, well, we can't prove that anything wrong went on here, so we guess it was okay. But yeah, just that kind of story can slip under the radar sometimes, and I thought it was one worth telling, whether that was the factor or whether a left fielder just misplayed a fly ball, we'll never know. But
who was the left fielder?
It's Minnesota Steve Bry.
Boy, he got in the record books for that. Okay, didn't hear much about it. No. The Immaculate Inning is the book. Joe Cox is the author, and it's put out by Lions Press. And I love it because it's one of those books, as you did last year, you can just pick up any chapter and learn some stories about baseball. But the last thing I'll mention is this, and it's sort of a pet peeve of mine. Ted Williams, of course, played his last game in 1941. He could have hit 400 without playing. He played and got six hits and hit 406. But there are certain players who have ducked out of the lineup to be a batting champ. What do you think of that?
Well, it's one of those interesting areas of baseball because it's, you know, kind of the unwritten rules are maybe that's okay. But at the same time, it sticks in opponents' craws, so to speak. And I know there was a recent one. My mind is running blank on who the player was, but an opposing pitcher was on Twitter kind of taking shots at the guy when he didn't appear in the lineup, just conveniently protecting his batting average. So that whole chapter with the batting title shenanigans is one of the more interesting ones because, yeah, sometimes you can really put a finger on it and say, oh, you know, this was dirty pool. The Lajoie thing is infamous. A couple of guys got banned from baseball because of that one. But the form it takes more often is the guy who's, you know, 4 points ahead of the second place guy in the final series. And, you know, maybe he bats once or maybe he just strangely isn't in the lineup on game 162. And people don't have as much trouble with that. I'm with you. I like the Williams solution of let's play it out and then let the fate of baseball make the final call.
Well, that's what the game is all about. It's the competition. And if you want to go in the record books, I guess 30 years later, no one will remember that you sat out the last game. But when it happens, it's obvious. And I don't know. I agree with you. I'd rather see the guy do the hitting. Well, it's great to have you on. It's a pleasure. Now, who do you root for? You're in Kentucky, are you not?
I am. I'm in Kentucky. I'm a Cubs fan. But my daughter, Natalie, who's 8 years old, she was the right age to see Madison Bumgarner have that historic October a few years ago. So she is a diehard Giants fan. She wore her Giants jersey to school on career day. She says she wants to be an MLB player someday.
All right. I like it. Well, we'll see. She's got to wait about another month for him to come back. But eventually he will come back. But I appreciate your being on. And as I say, it's one of those books that I'm so glad you do it because it preserves the lore of the game and the stories of the game that connect America and connect baseball. So nice job. Very good.
Thank you, Marty. Appreciate the kind words and always glad to talk with you and hope you guys enjoy a great baseball today.
Okay. Thanks, Joe. That is Joe Cox, The Immaculate Inning.